Free wisdom.
Welcome back to the Free Wisdom Podcast. This is episode 14. I'm your host, as always, Latif Wisdom.
I'm your co-host, Malcolm Voltaire.
And today we got a great guest. I want to learn, so I'm going to, you know, come from the perspective of just listening to this guy. I want to first open by saying, you know, I'm honored to have him because I believe we met, you know, first of all, Redan alumni, right? And, you know, it's Redan High School. That's Stone Mountain, Georgia. That's DeKalb County. That's Redan Road. But before we go into that, he invited me back in 2019. To a dinner, which was one of the coolest things I've been to because it was a ceremony to honor, I would say, Atlanta's not only creative scene, but business scene, anyone in Atlanta that's actually thriving and doing something within our culture that is benefiting us financially or creatively or in any shape, way, or form. So he invited me. And he gave me an award. The show was centered around, in my perspective, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, but centered around almost like a high school graduation because you gave me an award that said most likely to succeed. And I was, you know, for me, I was really cool. And then there was so many people I got to meet that night. So I loved it as a networking experience to get to know other people in the city and to be honored. That felt really good, man. But I'm going to let my guest introduce himself. And go from there.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it, man. Brandon Butler, CEO Butler ATL, you know, Culture Channel Media Company that's all about all things Atlanta, man. You know, and yeah, man, I was glad that we had a opportunity to, you know, highlight you and some other amazing people around the city. You know, we wanted to give out some superlatives. That was our first annual Most ATL Awards. You got shut down the next year because of COVID, but we're coming back. It's coming back this year, so we're gonna bring it back bigger and better.
All right, cool, man. So let's start from the top. You know, before we even get into Butler ATL, who's Brandon? How did Brandon get his start? What were you interested in first? What school did you go to? The whole nine.
Yeah, man. You know, Brandon, like I said, graduate of Redan out of Stone Mountain. You know, wasn't born out here. I'm not a Grady baby. You know, I don't know if they're going to hold that against me. You know, I was actually born in L.A.
Okay.
But I moved out here when I was 6 months old, so... I don't know. I feel like since then, you know, I've been out here the whole time. So I'm just saying, like, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, grew up on the east side, man. You know, always in and around the city of Atlanta. You know, one of my first jobs is at South DeKalb Mall and used to work downtown doing all kind of stuff. I used to work at South DeKalb Mall during Freaknik, like 95. You know, I remember that was my first job. I think they paid me $4.75 an hour.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
I was 15, but I lied on the application so I could get the job because I wanted a job. You know,
you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, man, I needed money back in the day.
No,
man.
I feel you.
Trying to get out and do stuff.
And you know? Freaknik, like,
can you explain how that vibe was for you?
Was this early Freaknik or towards the end of Freaknik?
This is like Freaknik 95, man. This is like right in the middle,
in the cusp of
what we know as Freaknik. You know, and then at South DeKalb Mall on top of that, man. You know, it was wild, man. You know, I mean, you know, all the stuff you think was happening. Folks was coming in the mall, wilding out, doing all that stuff. I just remember, honestly, two things. One, going to the food court and, you know, trying to eat lunch during Freaknik in the food court was a very interesting experience, you know, as a young teenager, you know what I'm saying?
A lot going on.
And then I remember, you know, trying to, like, leave the mall, you know what I mean? Mm. Like, I had my mom's car trying to leave and just... You know, it was like the beginning of a player's ball, you know what I'm saying? All the lacks, all the hustles. It was just, it was crazy out there in that parking lot, you know what I mean? So, and I, you know, just all kind of stuff. I remember, you know, being back on Memorial Drive back in the day before they built the median. That's why they built the median in the road. Because, like, we used to shut the road down on Memorial Drive right there by, like, 20 and where the jail is.
Yeah.
Before they built the jail to where it is now. You know, that's, like, the tallest buildings in DeKalb County.
But anyway, the jail over there, like, it's, like, right in DeKalb in the center.
They put it, like, in the perfect spot where you can see it from anywhere just to let y'all know they ain't fucking around.
Yeah.
Like, for real. But, yeah, man, you know, it's been around here for a minute. You know, always want, you know, growing up, man, I mean, you know, my dad and everybody was just always big on, you know, just make sure you make some money when you grow up. So I always thought about just like, all right, I want to make money. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want to be broke. I'm an only child, you know. So yeah. Mm-hmm. I originally wanted to be a pilot, but you see by these thick glasses I got on, that wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
So I started getting into computers, you know, in a like programming, building websites, fixing computers for a long time. And so like that's how a lot of people, you know, around Atlanta and everything knew me too, is I was like the go-to guy for like websites and apps and all that stuff for a long time.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Ended up working kind of in, you know, working in marketing, through working through radio stations and working at agencies, and again, just building relationships.
Yeah.
You know, got my MBA from Georgia Tech, did some stuff after that, and then kind of fell into this whole world of content, you know, launching Butter with Dagger at the time. It kind of blew up.
How was your, when steps back, how was your journey at Georgia Tech?
But it was interesting. You know, I took it upon myself to stay my blackety-black self at all times, mostly for my own amusement. Because I don't know, man. So I was in the executive MBA program. And just for, like, context, you know, like, with those, there's, like, different MBA programs. Like, the executive MBAs they're a little bit more selective for a lot of colleges, because basically everybody in that course or whatever is on the track to become, you know, a CEO or a founder or something like that. So like, even to like get accepted into the program, you got to have, you know, multiple letters of recommendation. You got to, I think you have to have like 10 years of like corporate experience, all this stuff. So, you know, I got an old mentor of mine, his wife had graduated, and he just was like, I feel like this is something that would kind of help you go to the next level, because I kind of see your potential, you know what I'm saying? And so I ended up going there, and it was cool, man. But it was just interesting to be in the early days. I remember, you know, one of the first days we were there, they kind of had us all in this like huge auditorium, and you know, you don't know nobody. You know, we're all sitting there. They had us all dressed up in suits and stuff, and they made you go like one by one. They were like, you know, why'd you come to Georgia Tech? And you know, everybody was like, oh, I want to do this, and I want to run a company, and I want to make $100 million. And they got to me, and I just like, man, I want to buy the world. You know, and everybody just kind of laughed at me, and I was like, all right, it's cool. But I mean, you know, I think for a lot of people in the beginning, people were trying to prove that they deserved to be there. And you know, my philosophy was always, we're here, like, you ain't got nothing else to prove. So like, sometimes there was some tension, you know, this is all pre George Floyd, so you know, people didn't know racism existed, all that kind of stuff. But like, I used to also do stuff to mess with them, I ain't gonna lie, you know. So you know, like, people used to come to class, you know, dressed up in suits. And again, like, with an executive MBA program, they built it for you to come into after you get off work. So like, at this point, I was the VP of digital for a PR firm called Edelman. Edelman is the largest PR firm in the world. I was the head of digital for their Atlanta office for like 6 years. So, nice. You know, I was at Edelman. Again, when you work in agency, you know, you wear like jeans and shirt, you know what I mean? You're just chilling, right? I mean, I remember people telling me I should probably dress nicer, and I was like, man, get out of my face.
Yeah.
But so I would come to class, you know, sometimes I'd be fresh off a plane. Like, sometimes I'd be flying back in from meeting clients out of town. And, you know, I didn't wear suits to work. So when I would come to class, you know, everybody's like, oh, you know, kind of giving you these looks sometimes. Like, oh, you know, what are you doing? Like, you ain't really professional.
You don't belong. Yeah.
And I'm like, bro, like, the way that the schedule works is that you would go to class from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Fridays. And then you would come back and you would go to class. You'd have to be on campus at 7, because class would start at 8 a.m. And you would stay in class from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday. So basically, like, in 2 days, you've done, like, you know, 12 plus hours, like, you know, executive level, like, you know, MBA grad school work. So putting on a suit wasn't my first priority. You know what I mean? I would just come to class, because, like I said, you just got off work. You just got done working a 40, 50 hour week. Now you're in traffic. Now you're trying to get here in time to go grab you something to eat. Then you finna go sit in, you know, a statistics class for 4 hours. You know, so like, you know, from 5 o'clock on Friday night in Atlanta, you know. So you're like, yo, I need to be comfortable. So I remember one thing about me, man, is I always talk to everybody, you know. I talk to everybody, every person, every student, every professor, every janitor, every cafeteria worker. So like, I ended up getting just cool with everybody. You know, a lot of the staff up there is black. And I mean, man, so I used to mess with folks, because like, we would come there at like 5 o'clock. They would like feed you. Well, actually, I think you had to be there like 4, because class started at 5. So like, we'd get there like 4 o'clock, 4:30, and you would go down to the cafe, and like, they'd have like, you know, food and stuff for you to eat before class started. So I got in real cool with the the cafeteria staff, who was all black women, you know what I mean? Yeah. And like they started making me a pitcher of Kool-Aid every week. So yeah, like I'd come to Georgia Tech and they'd have like a pitcher of red Kool-Aid, like, yo, what flavor? Like, I like red, you know what I'm saying? So they had like a pitcher of red Kool-Aid for me, you know, and everybody be sitting here like, what is this dude doing? And then like I'd bring the Kool-Aid to class, I'd have cups and stuff, yeah. I'd pour them around, like, yeah, we're gonna be there for 4 hours, might as well be comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. You brought life to these classrooms.
Yeah, man. And you know, it was interesting, you know, cause like I just remember, again, like I was in class with a lot of interesting people, but I just remember even certain conversations. Like I remember us having conversations about economics, and having, you know, white classmates say they thought Walmart was for poor people. You know what I mean? And like, yeah, hearing like, oh, so this is what people think kind of seen sometimes and stuff. And, nice, you know, just getting, yeah, like different context. And, you know, it was interesting. You know what I'm saying? Again, it wasn't all you know, this and the third, but it was a very interesting experience, especially at that level. Well, one of the really good things that ended up happening was, so at the end of you know, MBA is like, I think it was, what, 18 months or something like that. So at the end of, you know, the 18 months, one of the things you're working on is what's called a capstone project. Mm-hmm. Like your capstone is like your, you know, like, kind of like your senior project, right? Mm-hmm. Like you work on it for about a year, you know, to launch it and do all this kind of stuff with. So, you know, because I was in the entrepreneurial track, our capstone, we had to each team had to basically come up with a business idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to like self-organize in the teams, and then you had to pitch. So at this point, you know, we had like a bunch of, you know, kind of like mini pitch competitions in class, you know, and a lot of marketing stuff. Like in the beginning part, it was a little tough because like for me, I had never had like accounting classes before. You know what I'm saying? Like I was a computer science IT guy, right? So like we didn't have to take that stuff. So it was a little tough at the beginning, but like once we kind of hit the marketing stuff, and it was all downhill from there. So like I had like, you know, I had won a bunch of like the kind of the precursor, you know, mini pitch events, like amongst our class. Like it was one of kind of the top like kind of marketing folks. And what ended up happening was when we had to self-organize our capstone teams, I looked around and none of the black students in my cohort had gotten selected for a team.
Mm-hmm.
So basically all the black folks were like, yo, where's our team at?
Yeah.
And so we just decided, I was like, yo, like, let's all get together. So I remember I said, look, let's all get in the room. And I told them, I was like, yo, we gonna go kick their ass. Yeah. And we had the only all black team. We came up with an idea for a business. You know, I had done a bunch of pitches and stuff in the past, so I kind of knew I had won some like money from like doing pitch events and stuff in the past. Long story short, we came in first place with the competition.
Damn.
You know what I'm saying? And like, again, like that competition is judged by VCs, right? So like these are people that are in the Georgia Tech community that are successful, that judge this idea as if they were going to invest money in it. Or they might potentially invest money in it. Like, this ain't like, you know, students voting
or
professors, right? And so I remember when we got up and pitched, you know, every group, it was like an all-day event. Every group that would go up and pitch, you know, you had like a, you know, you do like a 20-minute presentation. You had to have all your financials, just all kind of stuff. And like, when you get done pitching, the VCs, were basically their job was like shoot holes in your idea and like ask you questions and like challenge you to make sure you kind of thought it through.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they were like, you know, certain people more than others, like they was ripping people apart. When it got to ours, they literally said like, you answered every single question. We don't have any questions. The only question we have is, how did you come up with this amazing idea?
Mm-hmm.
And then we ended up, you know, winning that the capstone. Now the crazy part is after we won, we got accused of cheating. You know, and I don't know how you cheat on a capstone when you have to like come up with a business idea. But basically the argument was like, in part of our pitch, we had a video that we used. I made a video because, again, I know how to do digital. I made like a little animation and made a video, and people were like, oh, we didn't know you could use video as part of the presentation. So like they cheated. And I was like, what? So, because...
this is business.
Right. And here's the thing, right? Strategically, the reason why I did video is because I've done pitch competitions, and the video allowed us to get all our key messages out very concisely without having to memorize them. Like, I was like, this ain't Easter speeches, bro.
Yeah.
So, like, everybody was trying to get up there because you had all these groups of, like, four or five people in it.
They stumbling.
It's like, you know, it's a bunch of A-type personalities.
They're treating it like it's some college shit instead of treating it like
it's business.
It's business. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, it's like, okay, you go first, and then I'm going to go. And I was like, nah. We got up there. I was like, boop. I pressed play. And, like, it ran through everything. It was like, this is the business, this is boom, it answered this. And this. So we spent the rest of the time literally like deep diving into all the questions that we knew they were going to answer. But like, we presented everything in like 2 minutes. And everybody was just, and like, nobody, again, that was a strategy. You know what I mean? I was like, yo, if we only got so much time, I'm not going to get up here because, you know, everybody's not a great public speaker. You know what I'm saying? Like, my mom used to make me do Easter speeches all the time. You know, make me do all this stuff. But like, everybody doesn't necessarily get up there and, you know, it's okay, you go. Then you stumble in trying to remember. So I was like, no, we're not going to do that. So,
let me ask you real quick. Were you in a suit at this time?
No, no, no. We even so it was funny.
Even then, you were still like,
no, I wasn't even in a suit. You know, what we did was we even went so far because I even had somebody make a logo for the business idea, and then we got shirts printed.
That's love.
And so we went up there.
See, I said, that's a whole different. That's the, you can't get mad.
I was like,
this thing on a whole different level.
That's what I was about to say, and I wanted to chime in because I'm like. What do you think the thing was that the mentality, the special part of the mentality that you had at that time kept you in that realm to like be your best? Was it the fact you wasn't like, I'm not taking this that seriously, but I'm working hard. But I'm also finding like peace in it. I'm also relaxing in it rather than being on 10, letting traffic stress you that. You was like, no, I'm gonna work comfortable outfit, I'll deal with it.
Yeah, man, I mean, that's always been me. I mean, you know, the uniform came in a little after tech because I was kind of burnt out everything. So I just decided I was going to start wearing the same thing every day. Yeah. But even then, man, like, I was just laid back, you know. And, you know, I tell people, like, bro, I come from, again, I know a lot of amazing black and brown people that have, you know, gold teeth, have locks. They just look ways that, like, normal or society would not think like a person is supposed to be that intelligent or that successful looking.
And they're brilliant.
And they're brilliant. And like, that's just where I come from, right? Yep. So, like, for me, you know, it's bro, I'm telling you, it's all these people, right? Like, one of my best friends, man, like, this dude got a mouthful of goals. He's got, you know, locks all the way down his back, but he's also a physicist. This dude has like a double PhD in physics. You know, you saw him walking down the street, even if you heard him talking, you might be like, yo, you know what I'm saying? But like, this dude is like one of the most brilliant people I know. Like, he's like the head of research for the University of Minnesota. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Does that frustrate you? Like, that's something that bothers me a lot of time, but how we are kind of taught to assume just because someone has locks like that or gold teeth or has an accent that I don't trust you. I'm gonna hold my pockets, whatever. That frustrates me because it's something taught to us and shown to us through marketing and media. And then now playing a role in that is Water ATL telling a story in a certain sense. How important is that for you to be like, I need to redirect that the imagery that was presented upon us through like generations in order for people to understand what you just said?
Yeah, man. You know, I spend a lot of time reading. And one of the things I've been reading a lot about over the last few months is how your subconscious mind works. I don't think if people really understood how their subconscious mind worked, they would do a lot of things differently. Because, like, you really got to understand how that drives your decision-making, how you operate. It literally keeps you alive. And you don't realize how much it's programmed by, like, the different things that you come into exposure with, right? And how it, like, frames the way you see the world and your perspective and just how you react to things. So, one, I'm just telling people you need to, you know, understanding how your mind works is the biggest flex of all time. Because once you understand that, you can do other stuff. But, like, to your point, you know, I think because of that, because I understand how that works, right, that's how I kind of look at butter, right, is, like, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there. And, you know, as much as people say that they don't like the negative stuff, like, people are drawn to that. If it bleeds, it leaves. They're kind of drawn to that whole disaster porn. You know, I think for us, we've always kind of tried to say, like, it's not just about that. And again, I've gotten called everything but a child of God. You know what I mean? I've gotten told, like, oh, you a sellout, you in white face, you in black face, you got white folks telling you what to do, none of which is true. But I'm like, I was having a conversation with somebody last week because, you know, they told me, they were like, you know, butter feels like it's still white. And I was like, well, let me ask you a question. What could I do to be blacker? I said, just out of curiosity, right? Like, look at what we do, look at what we talk about, look at the kind of content we put out, look at the people that we highlight, look at how, like I said, we were hollering at you, how, you know, highlighting like the people that we always felt like they needed the visibility and the platform. Mm-hmm. But yet, even through all that, we somehow are coming across "quote unquote" white, and that's just something that I've always been attacked with personally as a, you know, a black kid with glasses growing up. It's like, you know what I mean? If you ain't out here doing some crazy stuff, yeah, or you going to college, you know what I mean? So yeah. I'm used to that. But I always ask people, okay, if you think that we are white or putting on, then let me ask you, what could we do right now to fix it? How could we be blacker? And nobody ever has an answer to that.
Nobody has an answer.
But that's a weird dilemma, man. And it's like, I think the people who, I don't know those type of people who are saying that to you, but when I look at Atlanta, I look at it as like probably the only place that's like a huge HBCU.
Absolutely.
And in the HBCU, you're going to find all types of black people.
Absolutely. Yep.
And you're going to find voices for, you know what I'm saying, representations for all those types of black people. So I think it's like, if you never experienced that environment, like an HBCU environment, or even watched goddamn a different world, you know what I'm saying, at the base, you know what I mean, you're not going to necessarily even understand what somebody could put out that's not ratchet, that's not this part of Atlanta.
And go back to the subconscious, like, what is blackness? Like, you know, we're watching, most of the people probably saying that involved, like, you know, grew up through trap music, hip-hop music, mm-hmm. and it's like, that's making it and looking out for your moms and being real and having loyalty. Like, these little, you know, those little subjects, those little checkpoints that make you black, that kind of unspoken understanding. And know that when you don't abide by those rules, that's what...
Or rumor-driven, or, you know,
rumor-driven, because it's all subconscious. It's weird. Don't believe it, because when you ask them, they don't have nothing to say.
Yeah, I mean...
They don't believe it in themselves. They just know, like, they've been taught it in a way. Or,
right. And, and blackness is a spectrum, right? Like, there's not one kind... And, you know, and Butter, like I say, is for people that care about and think Atlanta's dope. It's got the spin on it, because as a black man, this is a lot of reflection of just my experience and people around me and stuff. But, like, again, I've never said, like, it's the black channel. I think it's the culture channel. And, you know, a lot of that, because of Atlanta, inherently is going to speak to, like, black culture. But, I mean, we want to be inclusive. We holler at all kind of, you know, different groups and brands. But, yeah, man, it's just interesting, right? Like, I think, you know, people always got to put you in a box in some way. And I think for us, because we've done something that people haven't really seen before. They haven't really seen a person move the way I move. They just assume that there's, like, some ulterior motive or something like that. Something I'm telling y'all, like, I am really not, bro, I'm not, like, I'm in my own world over here doing what I do. And also this thing, too, right? Like, you know, even with the content we put out, bro, like, I'm a parent. You know what I mean? Like, I think about, you know, putting out content that only shows the worst parts of anything. Mm-hmm. You know, Atlanta, you know, you're doing it for, like, different reasons. It's dangerous, because I'm telling you, people see that and they think that's how things are down here. They see, you know, all these videos. They think that, they literally think that if you go into Lenox Mall, you will be shot on sight.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? They literally think it's a war zone out there because people put out content and that's all they highlight. They think it's funny and they get, like, the dopamine hit of getting the engagement. But on the flip side, the world sees that and they think that's what's going on in Atlanta. Now, the problem is I'm the father of a black son. You know what I'm saying? So, like, what happens when somebody comes in contact with him? Are they going to think, you know, that he's doing something crazy because they saw this content about, man, y'all just wild down there in Atlanta? You know what I'm saying? So I think, again, like, just people that have, anybody that has a platform has a responsibility, you know, to highlight. And again, for us, I tell people, like, you know, you don't have to send us any videos of crime. You don't have to send me fights. I'm not going to post them. There's other places you want to get that out. Like, I don't need to post anybody getting their behind whooped. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, we also don't hide from certain issues, right? We don't hide from certain things. And, you know, again, just on the flip side, man, like, I even think, like, people don't even consider, like, the toll that takes on you as an individual, right? Like, you know, for me, I never even thought about, like, when the whole rape social justice movement was happening and all the George Floyd stuff, and, like, and it seemed like every week another black person was getting killed by police. I remember having a conflict and saying, man, I do not want to have to create a piece of content every time a person gets killed by police. Like, I don't want to have to run home and stop what I'm doing.
That's what it felt like was happening. That shit was traumatizing, bro.
So back to your point when you said the subconscious, like, man, this is the, we're still, like, guinea pigs for this shit, man.
Like, it's almost like a in line. Like, remember your place in the world, because look how we can take.
There's never been a culture in society where we've been experiencing this much information at one time.
Yeah,
and we don't know the side effects. So I appreciate you being like, this is why I'm doing this. You know what I mean? Like. Yeah. Because your subconscious matters.
And if you think about it, again, like, remember, my background's in tech, right? And I used to build apps. So I think about a lot of things very programmatically.
Mm-hmm.
So let me point something out. How many times on social media in general have you seen a black or brown person be killed? By anybody, mm-hmm. by police, by anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now ask yourself, how many times on social media have you seen a white person or an Asian person or Latino? Right, I'm just saying, how come...
That's deep, bro.
Now think about it.
That's deep, bro.
Like, think about when that happens. Think about how you were seeing all that content right leading up to the election. It seemed like every week, for some reason, it was okay to post the video, like not even like the literal video showing a person mm-hmm. losing their life on social media, and it's getting shared, and it's getting amplified, and they're black people more often than not, right? Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden, bloop, somebody flipped the switch and turned it off.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, when y'all really start thinking about how easy it is to manipulate people because they look at this thing all day long and they don't have a broader context for the world, like, you would move differently. And, like, that's how I see it. I look and see, like, man, they really turn up, you know, the let's piss everybody off stuff right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it and they get everybody riled up and then they turn it back down and everybody calms down. But think about that, man. Over the last few years, it seemed like every time you opened up, I remember, bro, I remember when Ahmaud Arbery got killed. I was on a conference call with all white people. And, you know, you'd be on your phone, you scrolling, just looking, and all of a sudden it's like, what's this? And it's just a video of him being shot on like Instagram. And like, you know what I mean? It's like no warning. It's just then you see it being posted again and again and again. You know, I saw a video a couple months ago where somebody had literally jumped off the top of Spaghetti Junction and committed suicide, and people were posting the video.
That's insane. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, and what's crazy is like they censored it. But I'm just thinking to myself, in order to put that graphic over it, you still had to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so again, like, what is that? Like, I'm telling you, it's tough. It was tough for me. Yeah. I remember when Rayshard Brooks got killed, bro. I was asleep, and my phone starts blowing up at 1 o'clock in the morning because I knew people that were in the Wendy's line, and they were literally sending me video, the same video that ended up on TMZ. I had people texting me because they were literally at the line. So here's my point, right? Like, we talk about how you want to like take a social media break. What happens when the social media comes to your text messages?
Yeah.
Because
it's all the metaverse at this point.
Right. And you know what I'm saying? And now all of a sudden, now in the middle of the night, I'm looking at this, I don't know what's happening. And then I wake up and I see everything happen and I'm like, man, we gotta say something. So now I'm like, now I gotta make a piece of content. Yep,
do that.
Because if I don't, we ain't for the culture.
Yeah. That's what I was just thinking. It's like that's a weird dilemma to be in,
during that time, it's crazy, during that time, because that's it spiked during COVID.
Yeah.
The killings. Which was so bizarre. I think the same way, similar to how you think. I'm always like, why is it shown to us consistently? Right. Like, I'm always thinking of like, okay, if it was a media company, someone owns it, someone funds the media company, then why are they putting this out? Why are they putting okay on this very constantly? What's the purpose? But in that time, I created a brand, a thing called BAMC, because I feel like these things affect not only like your emotion, but like your creativity, like what you're going to produce now to speak about these issues or just clouding anything you're planning. If I wanted to put something out about the color orange, I have to postpone, but no, it's about our people now.
Yeah.
Because this is how it's affecting me. So like we came up with BAMC, Black American Merchant Class. And it was about reimagining the imagery presented us. Cause it's, to me, it was a biographic, not autobiographic for us to speak on our own history, and then just in society, black fathers leave the house, angry black woman, like all these little things. I'm like, who said these? What was the first spark? And I wanted to change that by just pitting on an idea that was like, here, change the ideas that's presented upon you every single day, which back into the subconscious. But it's like that whole area came birthed from these scenarios, seeing this stuff and like getting my take on it, and then being introduced to Hidden Colors at well, I say 17.
Yeah.
I cried immediately. Like, that was the first time I felt the you know, what we have dealt with as an individual in this body, in this country. And then all I could do was call my sister. Was like, how is this? How are we going to move forward? And she was like, welcome to Black America.
Yeah.
And I was just, and that from there, I was like, oh yeah, I'm locked in. Like, and I can't deny it. And so when we are pressed, when those buttons are pushed for us on TV, it does feel like, to me, it's like, what is this provoking? What is this? What's the message? Because yeah, I think you need to get those stories out. It changes the world. But it like you said, it stops, then it starts. And so those flows, how it fluctuates, is bizarre to me. I'm like, what are they trying to pull from us at that moment to make us go to that space and whatever, whatever. And yeah, man.
I spend a lot of time thinking. I make a lot of observations, and somebody kind of pointed this out to me. And so I just give you something to think about, right? Like, mm-hmm. TikTok, for example. You know, TikTok is owned by ByteDance, which is a Chinese company. I've been to China.
Yeah.
You know, when you go to China, a lot of companies, when you go to China, they won't even let you take your laptop.
Inside
the country.
Because
they're just honestly known for stealing technology. I mean, it happens with a lot of patents. You know what I'm saying? Like, you'll try to, like, launch a patent. Like, I spent time over there as part of my MBA. Like, we've had these conversations how, like, you come with an idea. If you want to release it in China, you have to submit it. You have to run everything through the government.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, let's look at your patent application. And they get it. And, like, you know, 6 months later, they're like, oh, this is declined because we actually have this company that started over here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But think about this for a second, right? Like, so, you know, everybody has TikTok. Nobody really knows how it works because the company is run over in China.
Mm-hmm.
But look at the behaviors that it rewards. So every time you pull it up, it's, you know, especially with Black folks, it's comedy, it's twerk videos, it's like all this kind of ratchet stuff, right? Well, what people don't realize, though, is over in China, do you know the majority of the, what do you think they over making, you know, twerk videos in China? No, bro, like they making videos about engineering, math, science, and like those are the videos that go viral over there. Mm. That's the content that's like elevated over there, right? So you got to start asking yourself, why is certain content over here that's, as I always say, there's three kinds of content. There's vitamin, candy, and painkillers, right? And like, you know, everybody loves candy, but too much candy, well, what? Rot your teeth?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It'll make you sick, you know what I'm saying? And it just seems like for some reason, the candy stuff always gets amplified. So like, even in the context of everything that's going on in the world right now, I'm just saying like, man, like we ain't prepared if some stuff jump off. You know what I'm saying? Because we've been over here making twerk videos and all this stuff and, you know,
entertaining.
And all these like skits and everything. And, you know, I'm just saying, man, if you really take a step back and look, rest of the world don't move like that.
So how do you feel about the theory that social media feeds into the seven deadly sins? Have you heard of that?
I haven't heard of it. What's the specifics of it?
It just says, like, when it comes... I'm really asking this, too, because you say your IT background, outside of butter, like...
Yeah.
They say a lot of the stuff that's designed, social media apps, they're geared towards...
One of the seven deadly sins. Oh, yeah, I've heard that before. I mean, I think it's, you know, I think it's...
Because I think it feeds into what you're saying, too. It's like, you know what I mean? A little bit. I think it... I would love to label stuff as like somebody's against Black people, but a lot of times, bro, Black people, they just love doing ignorant shit, bro. We keeping it a buck. Like, Black people
said.
There's like 60% of us.
That's what he said. It's shit, candy. Bro. You're right. It's like the fact that it is a place for, like you said, TikTok being used for engineering, telling stories. Now, sometimes you find some TikToks about how to manage your taxes.
Right.
So we get a little bit of those in America as well, but we do like the candy a lot more. Candy is embedded in our
sugar subconscious.
Sugar
is one of those.
Yeah.
Well, that's because America exports, like, at this point.
Entertainment, sex.
Entertainment and culture, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again, that's how the rest of the world kind of sees us, too.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, again, you have to travel, you have to see stuff.
Yeah,
and you have to be able to like take a step back sometimes and just ask yourself like, what does all this mean in the broader context of the world?
Yeah, I think zoom
you know
out.
Again, it's easy not to, but I think even for me, just with the stuff we do, I do kind of ask myself again, like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, what does all this mean, or what does all this look like? And I think for me, you know, I just want to, you know, I want to do something that I'm not, you know, ashamed of, or like, or like I have, you know, people hitting me up talking about how I posted something that, you know, we came out with something
triggered
that
them,
hurt their family or something like that. You know, I think as a parent, you know, what if that was my child that was getting their ass whooped on social media and everybody was like making jokes memes on the video and memes about it, you know what I'm saying? And so like that's why I try not to put that stuff out, because I would not want to be in that position if it was on the other side.
And then that's a good question. Why do you do it for? A lot of times I find a very divine place in why I create, which is inspiration.
Because
when people come to me and say, yo, you're the reason I started my brand. You're the reason my girlfriend confronted her trauma. Like, whatever it is, it's like, what am I doing? Why am I inspiring people? Like, you know what I'm saying? And it's sometimes it's like, you know, I'm going to be patient and allow myself and what I'm doing to align that for me on my path. Sometimes it's more like, I need to know right now, like, why I'm doing this. And I think most of the time, the inspiration, that feeling of like giving someone a purpose and whatever that direction is, whatever they find, is just, that's all. That's all. I'm glad you got to go on your journey and give yourself some type of purpose and spark in a direction. Because sometimes I get in that spot, I'm like, yeah, it's so, like, it's a lot you can be doing, you know, in multiple directions of, and then it doesn't always have to be entertainment. Like, I love animation, fashion, design. This is kind of forms of entertainment, but expression as well. And human expression and through culture is necessary for the heartbeat of the light of life, you know. So sometimes going to that place too, like Butter ATL is for that, for Atlanta. Just to breathe, just to say, this is our presence. And yeah, some of the stuff be funny that we see on the highway or see in media or talk to when our mayors or anything, and our culture goes. It gives us a heartbeat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I mean, like, again, man, we try not to shy away from stuff. I tell people, I wish there's more stuff we could do. We just, you know, like anybody else, we have resources that we got to like limit sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time too, right? Like as I've done this, I've come to respect, you know, journalists more and more.
All right.
And I tell people to say that because I'm not a journalist, right? But what we do is important. When we put information out there, it's important. We want it to be factually accurate. We don't want to, you know, miss, you know, not position people the right way. And so, again, just having a level of intentionality around that is always important, man. But, you know, going back to your point on purpose, I think, you know, at a certain point, you got to start asking yourself like the questions, like, what am I doing? You know, what's my purpose? And, you know, there's a book that I read, one of my favorite books. It's Interview with the Devil by Napoleon Hill. Right. Nice. And like one of the things they kind of talk about in that book, there was always this line that just always stuck out to me where he kind of talks about, you know, a lot of people think like hell is something that you experience when you die. He was like, the reality is hell is living a life where you're not living your purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And like the real, as the kind of the book's idea is like, you know, the reason the devil exists is basically to get you to not figure out what your purpose is and to not live it out to your fullest ability. Because if you're not doing that, then you're not doing what you were destined to do. And like that is hell. So for me, like when I heard that, it just always made me say, like, continuously asking myself those questions, like, what are we doing? What's the purpose of this? And, you know, I don't, you know, without getting all deep, like, I don't think that people have, like, one purpose. I think it could be a lot of different things. But I do think...
you can get deep here.
I do think the earlier you can figure out or start to get aligned with it, the better.
Mm-hmm.
One of the people that I'm the most jealous of are, like, the people that figure out what they want to do when they're, like, you know, kids.
12, right. Bro, like,
like, think about how amazing that is, you know, to just know what you want to do and with conviction, and then to be able to spend a majority of your life
just applying pressure to that. Right. You might go to other things, but.
Right, and enjoy it and still being happy about it, too. So, like, even with my kids, you know, like, that's one thing I've been really big on them about, is just, like, experiences, you know, trying to show them things and get them exposure to stuff just so they start to understand their options, because I don't know, maybe one of those will unlock them figuring out their purposes, and then, you know, they can be that kid that's had it, had something they want to start doing, and they can say, you know, I did this when I was 12 and I enjoyed doing it, and like, you know, my daddy wasn't putting no pressure on me to go. It's just because I want to do it, right? I think that's just an amazing place to be at, you know?
It is. I had that similar upbringing at 16, but I knew I wanted to do what I'm doing now. In the second grade, I knew that, and it was just but also had my mom to say, you're in talent. I know you don't like the class, Latif, but I know like sometimes you don't want to sit there those long hours, but I love your artwork. And she always made me know I'm an artist before it was even looking good. And so that really pushed me to say, I'm good at this. You know, wear that on your chest. And I never looked at it like a privileged place. You know what I'm saying? Like, some people don't get that feeling that age. Sometimes it comes at 45 and you're like, oh shit, I'm late. But it's like, you know, and I never looked at it like that. I was just like, just find out what you want to do as a kid, right? And now, you know, but for the past 10 plus years, been sitting with that. I'm like, oh, this is not natural, you know?
Right.
This is not natural to everyone. Everyone's different in that way.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, man. What made you want to stay in Atlanta? Like after high school and everything and, you know, college, what made you want to stay in Atlanta?
I mean, I definitely thought about leaving a few times. You know, and I almost took a couple of different jobs out of state, man. But you know, again, I had the ability to travel, you know, and just go places. And you know, it was always funny every time I would travel, especially especially in the United States. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, you know, it's hard to find the black people in other places. I mean, outside of like a few cities, you know, outside of like a DC. You know what I'm saying? Like a couple other places, it's hard to find the black people. Like you start going around and you start looking at me and like, yo, like I'm really the only person around here. I feel uncomfortable.
Real.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's
and that's why I tell people, like, whenever you travel, man, like when you come back to Atlanta, just take a moment and look around at the airport. Mm. You will never see that many black and brown faces at all walks of life.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
From pilots to business people, right. Janitors, mm-hmm. people working in there. But I'm telling you, when you go other places, you'd be lucky if you see any black employees at the airport.
Oh my God.
You see them, they probably going to be a janitor. You know, they still got a lot of shoe shine booths at a lot of these airports. They probably working in the shoe. It's crazy, mm-hmm. right? And so, and that's, you know, I always say that's like a small sample of the city. Then when you go out into the city, it's even more like, well, like,
I'll give you a perfect example.
Yeah.
Camp Creek's Publix.
Right.
Amen. Not only is there never black people working there, and there's never black people shopping in that mall. That's the blackest Publix in the world.
No, that side of town is the blackest part of Atlanta. Yeah, that's thriving, really nice. I lived over there for like 2 years.
Some people with money, there's everybody over there.
Like you need that, because when you travel, you do be like, okay, I feel awkward.
Yeah.
Like, so when we do like tours and stuff of different little cities around in the South, and when we go as a unit. I'm like, and it feels like the, no matter what, we could be.
We're gonna take we here. We gonna be us.
It's like we're bringing us no matter what. Like. Yeah. And it's necessary because of that feeling. Like, because it does feel like, oh, this feels a little awkward. Da, da, da.
Chicago has a
little taste of that, too. A little black city.
And you go out there, you can't find no damn lemon pepper wings. No,
that's real.
Everybody's
eating
buffalo wings. You know what I'm saying?
Look, I picked lemon pepper. We went to a spot in Miami. I was like, can I get lemon pepper hot? It's like, what is that?
What? Wings. What are y'all eating down here?
Like, what are you doing?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, man. But I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, man. You know, I've before Butter, like I would always say, like if I ever would leave, where would I go? And that's something, I think there's a very short list of places that I would go. But even in those places, right? Like I'm just telling you, man, like it's still hard to find the black folks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like if you want to move to a major metropolitan, like metro area in the country, I'm telling you, man, you get out there, you start looking around. I mean, you can find us, but like there's nothing like Atlanta.
Yeah,
And it's just, you know, for me, it's kind of hard to beat that. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Question. I overheard you talking when we got here. Two things I want to ask. First, I'm going to ask, how was it interviewing Stacey Abrams?
It was cool, man. It was cool. Interview getting ready to drop soon. It was a good experience. It was, you know, she's definitely, I could see, like, she's a major league politician.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say that to say like in a shady kind of way. I just like the way that she carried herself.
Mm-hmm.
I could 100% see her not just being the governor, but also potentially being in the White House one day.
Yeah,
and
you
just kind of feel a certain presence around
essence,
people.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? And I kind of got that vibe around.
She got the glow. She got a little glow.
Yeah, she kind of had, you know, some glass dragon stuff going on. You know what I'm saying? Like, she hadn't hit her final form yet.
second form freezer.
I feel like something's coming. You know
okay, no, I feel it. I feel
and
it.
Then how was the mayor? I said, I just, you know, so before I even asked you that, I was literally invited to sell some shades. I sell a lot of eyewear.
Yeah.
In the West Atlanta called Unity. Shout out to Unity. And I met Yolanda. She owns Iwi Fresh. So shout out to Yolanda at Iwi Fresh. I get there, and also shout out to Kai for the sale and for the connection. I get there, and I'm just selling her the shades, trying it on. It's nice. The owner of the spot is like, yo, Cass, like he's talking to his team.
Yeah.
I need y'all undivided attention. And now he's like, the mayor's here. So he's like, I'm just here selling shades. He's like, here, record this. He gave me the phone. I'm just recording his conversation with the mayor. I'm like, the mayor? Because all this in my head is Keisha Lance Bottoms. So
right,
I'm
right.
Like, I've hardly been on game paying attention to this debate and to the election. Yeah. So here we go. They talk, and I get the moment to talk to him. And we chopped it up. I told him about what we do on this side of town, what me and Malcolm do, what all of us do with fashion and design, and how we're trying to fund that place to actually, because being a young designer in Atlanta, it's almost like this front of people who have, because it's kind of like makeshift. We're building it.
Yeah.
The fashion industry, at least from a super black creative perspective. And it's this front of like, when people get there, they kind of box everyone else out.
Yeah.
In a sense of like, no, we ain't gonna just give you it because we got it and it took a long time. And this is a different element.
It's our time, right?
Yeah, it's ours.
Yeah,
it's a lot of ego attached. So that's why I talk.
Ego?
It's crazy. So when I talked to the mayor, it was really dope to like, break that down and say, we're trying to do this because we got people who just wanna actually have careers and just not have to go through that ego bridge. And I'm like, if we could find a way. He was open ears to that conversation. Mm. And I was just out of nowhere. We got massages in the place. It was crazy. But that was a dope experience meeting him, and I wanted to know how was your experience. So you sat down and talked to him, got a little in more depth. How was that?
I mean, it was cool, man. You know, I've had the pleasure to know Dre for a few years. I still call him Dre. I had to catch myself. You know, I'm sorry, Mayor Dickens, you know what I mean? But like, you know, one thing I can say about him is he's always been a guy that's, you know, done the work.
Mm-hmm.
He's always been a guy that's been around, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a member at the Gathering Spot, you know, shout out to Ryan and TK, and like, you know, you would always see Dre, and they're just like floating around, talking to people, having meetings. Mm-hmm. I mean, for years.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's one of, I think that's where I might have met him at. You know what I mean? And again, like, he was always approachable. Even back then, I remember last year we did our 404 Day celebration. They came out. The city gave us a proclamation for it.
That's nice.
He was still, you know, city councilman at that time, but he came out. You know, I still got his cell phone. You know, I text him. You know, he'll text me. You know what I'm saying? It's weird. It's kind of weird now. It's like, you know, I told him, I was like, all right, you know, I gotta you know, get my KB city nothing ratchet. You know what I'm saying? You gotta keep it open. But like even when you know, even the night that he won the election, after he did his acceptance at the Gathering Spot, he went to the Crystal that we did, the collaboration. He was like, yo, this is my first meal. He took a photo. He texted me a photo of him and his girl in the in the drive-thru, like, ordering food, right? So, like, one thing I can just say about him is, like, having had that relationship, you know, the interview was easy.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably the first time that he and I, like, you know, spoke on camera. But I mean, we've had many conversations, and I can honestly say, like, you know, he's definitely somebody that, you know, cares about this city, that wants to see it, you know, be great. And I think the benefit is that he's been so close to the culture,
mm-hmm.
you know, he knows the people, people know him, he's been accessible, that, mm-hmm. you know, it's you really can kind of have trust that there's somebody in there that definitely has, you know, everybody's best interest in place. So for me, that conversation was it was funny, man. Like, it's funny now when he pulls up with his security and I'm like, bro, you used to pull up, you know, and just pull up, you know what I'm saying? Like, now you pull up, we got security, you gotta show up and everything. I mean, it's cool, you know, but it's just funny being like,
I know you, bro.
His security guards is night and day. One was like, hey man, I like your clothes, man, it's pretty nice. The other guy was like just staring at him like, don't say nothing crazy.
And one thing that's interesting too, man, I'll just say, like, you know, if you really think about it, like, that's just another example how, To me, Atlanta is a place where still anything's possible.
Yeah.
You know, like Dre's stories, again, he's a guy from here. He went to school out here. He went to high school. He grew up out here.
Yeah.
You know, he ran a furniture store for a long time. He worked his way up. And, like, now he's literally the mayor of the city, right? And I think, you know,
it's fire.
Yeah, yeah, like, he doesn't come from, like, you know what I'm saying, no crazy silver spoon background. Like, he was really in these streets with people doing that stuff. So I think it's just important to see people like that, you know what I mean? Because it just lets you know it's possible. Yeah. It lets you know that, like, yeah, there's still a world where anybody can go out there, do the work, and, you know, reach these levels. You know what I'm saying?
That's it, man. And for you to see that, though, I think that's impactful for what you're doing. It's like,
yeah.
It's almost a little bit of validation for what you're doing, too. It's like, it's here. You know what I mean? Like, and we see the journey, not just myself, but other people, like, I think that's dope, man.
Absolutely, absolutely, man.
Yeah, man. And, you know, what is some, like, advice, too, for, you know, kids, I guess, starting to journey into developing their own publication or magazine or even trying to create a voice for industries that Atlanta is currently funding and building at this moment?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, again, man, I'm a businessman at heart, so... Yeah. I'm always telling people, you know, I think, you know, you really, especially in this content game, you really got to start with the end in mind. You know, if you're doing it and you're trying to make money, you know what I'm saying? You really got to think about ways that you can serve that audience, because there's a lot of options out there. You know, cell phones have leveled the playing field. And there's a lot of people that are super talented with, like, a lot less than what you have.
Yep.
So I think, you know, if you're trying to do it, you got to find, you know, an audience. And you got to super serve that audience, right? You know, for me, I've always, you know, one of my favorite, you know, quotes from this guy, Seth Godin, he's like a well-known marketer, is like, it's all about small groups of interested people. So even with Butter at Scale, I've always thought about, okay, but what are, like, the subgroups within that? So, like, how do we do content for the people that love cars? How do you do content for the people that love food, right? And, you know, because... instead of just having, like, a food channel, like, we serve these little micro audiences, right? Yes. I think, you know, for the people that are... But I had the ability to do that because, you know, I had a little bit more ammunition in my, you know, in my war chest. I could do a little bit more things. I think if you're starting now, honestly, you need to figure out... You need to do everything you can do to figure out who your audience is, and you need to serve the hell out of them.
Nice.
You know, I was giving somebody some advice. It's like, you know, if you can find new and emerging, like, cultures... and you can be the first one to serve them, that's a gold mine, right? So in other words, you know, if you take a step back and you just look at what's going on right now, right? Like, you know, I don't know. Like, I was at a, like, I noticed, like, gas prices right now are crazy, right? So there's probably a culture, if you can find, like, where's the group of black people at that is out here being like, because gas prices are crazy, we're all about, you know, walking and riding bikes and all this kind of stuff, right? If you can find that group of people and you can create content for that group before they become mainstream, you can grow with that group and create tons of opportunity for that kind of stuff. So it just, for me, I think, you know, you got to learn how to get out your own way and you got to be really honest with yourself about, you got to get out your own way, you know? You know, like, you can make
big
content.
One.
You can make content for yourself.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, everybody might not rock with that.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're doing business, like, business is business is business. You know what I'm saying? It's like, even with Butter, there are certain things that I want us to do, but I know it's not going to work. You know what I mean? So, do I do it and, like, try to shove it down people's throat and say, this is the next thing? Or do I do things that are going to work and find ways, more strategic ways to introduce those things I want to do, right? So I think you just got to, like, be honest with yourself, not getting your own way. But at the end of the day, man, like, you know, this thing is, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're trying to build something, you know, my favorite example is, you know, you're basically jumping off a cliff and building a plane on the way down. And, like, gravity's going to kick in.
Yeah. At some point.
At some point. You know, and I think a lot of people, they jump off and they're building this plane.
Yeah.
And they're acting like it's okay if it doesn't fly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, nah, bro, you better get this thing figured out.
Hit the ground.
And, yeah, like, you know, like, it ain't always survivors.
Yeah. 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 And then, so another thing, too, How is the gathering spot? How's your experience there? I say that because I was invited, went through the whole initiation process. Didn't really sign on yet, but I'm going to, and I want to. But from your perspective, how's the journey so far?
Yeah, man. I'll give him a little shout out. You know, Ryan. Look, man. I need y'all to, you know, somebody
give y'all a sponsor. Shout out. Need a sponsor on the Free Wisdom Podcast.
I'm about to text you real quick. So, you know, y'all need to come over here. We can just figure it out. So here's the thing, right? You know, this is why I think what TGS is doing is special. Mm-hmm. Have y'all ever been to South by Southwest?
Yeah.
I've never been. I always every one of my friends has been.
All right.
I haven't been.
So. Mm-hmm. If you've been to South by Southwest, the badge alone to go, so the way it's, you know, it's a digital music and film kind of TV conference. It's like 2 or 3 weeks in Austin. Uh-huh. You can go like to different tracks. I would always go to the digital track. But like the badges alone are like $1,000, $1,200. Mm-hmm. Right? But when you get that badge, they basically take like downtown Austin and they like take over the whole downtown. All the restaurants, they go in, they shut the restaurant down. So instead of it being, you know, STK, it's, you know, Ludacris's Digital Lounge, right? And they buy out all the restaurants. And like, so when you have that badge, you don't have to pay for food. You can go to all these different like speakers. You can go to the trade shows. And after hours, they have like events. So it's like, oh man, you know, Run from Run DMC, he's performing over here, or this for T.I. is performing over here. You can like go to all these because you have this badge, right? Mm-hmm. That's why it costs $1,000, $1,200. Then the hotels, they jack up all the hotel prices. One time I went out there, I paid $900 a night to stay at a Courtyard by Marriott.
What?
Because they know that corporations are coming, and you know, y'all got them corporate Amexes, so they jack them prices up, right? But here's the thing. So here's the thing, right? If you go to South By and you actually go, like a lot of people just go down there and kick it and hang out. But like if you go to the conference and like get the hotel and pay, you know, for the badge, you know, you're probably in $5,000 to $10,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's another thing. It's called the All In Summit. It's for like, you know, executives and leaders and stuff. The ticket for that is $7,500. Here's my thing. If you pay in $5,000 to go to South By or $7,500, you better talk to every person there. 100%. Because if they got that badge on, that meant that somebody put up $5,000 to $10,000 for them to go.
And you better not be in that hotel room.
And you better not be in that hotel
room. All that money.
Anybody with that badge on is worth talking to. I remember going out there and I would talk to everybody. Oh, you're the head of marketing for this. Oh, you're the director of this. Mm-hmm. Oh, like, because they all, like, why else would they be out there?
Yeah,
if they got a company that can put up $5,000 to $10,000 for them to come out there, they worth talking to, right? Mm-hmm. To me, the gathering spot is a very similar experience to that. Because there's a barrier to entry, which is a small, you know, it's a couple $100 a month or whatever, you know, membership fee, you know, you get to get into a space with other people that have very similar mindsets and are just doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to find people like that in a concentrated area.
Yeah.
So to me, while I don't personally use TGS as a co-working space, one, I just like working from home. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's just easier for me, and I got all my screens and I can just do what I want to do. I love it for, you know, just when you're, I always meet or talk to somebody interesting every time I'm there. Lots of business opportunities that happen because it's somebody I met there, whether I was having a drink and we started talking or whatever. It's like just anybody around there. I told somebody this the other week. It's a friend of mine. He just moved out here from North Carolina. And I told him the same thing. I said, bruh, you should make it a point to try to talk to every single person that you see walking in this space.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because there's a barrier to entry. They're paying a couple $100 to be here. They're probably doing or working on something that's interesting. So even if there's not like a business opportunity, you're just gonna meet some dope people that are doing some cool stuff. And this is kind of the epicenter of where all that stuff is happening, right? Yeah. So like, you know, yeah, you can find people, there's stuff all over the place, but I think that to me is the biggest value is that they have concentrated that and now they're doing it at the next level, which is in other cities. And then when you think about kind of the network effect of what they're building, when all these cities kind of come online, now you have this like, you know, US-based web of like black people that are executing at a certain level. And it just, again, when that network effect kicks in other words, the network effect is just for every additional person that uses it, it becomes more valuable.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, if you think about, like, the English language, right? Like, if you're the only person who spoke English, it's useless because nobody else uses the language. Mm-hmm. But as soon as another person can speak English, it's useful. Now, when everybody speaks it, you know, so that's it's a network effect, right? So it's the same thing. It's like, as more people come online, as more cities come online, as more people become members, the network effect and the value of what they're building, I mean, bro, like, again, people ain't figured it out yet, but they're building $1 billion company.
Yeah.
Like, y'all just ain't figured it out.
Exactly. Yeah. No,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So yeah, that's why I say so. So shout out to Ryan and TK. I want my, you know where to cash at.
He just influenced me to sign up.
Y'all know where to cash at, okay?
But yeah, man. I've always... You know, I've been in there plenty of times for panels.
Yeah.
Met amazing people during those panels. People that I've met, obviously, in other spots, but we all meet here. And this is, you know, I walk in there thinking, like, you know, okay, I walk in, I'm paying this monthly. If I feel like I need to be getting some out of that, I know the next person sitting down is like, this better be beneficial because I'm paying this monthly. So which causes you to get up and act and do? Right. You know, so it's a good incentive.
Yeah.
Think about it. It makes you push. So, yeah, thank you for that. I need that perspective. Yeah, man. Before, you know, I don't want to close out just yet. I don't think we at an hour.
Yeah, yeah, we got. Well, let me ask you this question. Yeah. How do you feel like us as artists can contribute more to the landscape of Atlanta?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I know it's kind of a general question, but I definitely would love your perspective on it.
You know, I think, well, again, I don't consider myself to be an artist, so I don't think I know everything about it, but I definitely work with a lot of amazing people and creatives that are doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the again, man, from a business standpoint, the biggest thing I think we can do is just be successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think, you know, there's opportunities out here using things like, you know, NFTs and, like, you know, just like new emerging technologies. I think that what artists can do is embrace the changes that are happening, because a lot of times, like, you gotta remember, like, anytime there's a gold rush, the real money is made in selling picks and shovels, not getting the gold.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I think, like, as an artist, like, you embrace NFTs not because you think you're gonna sell the next NFT for $10 million. You embrace it because then you have a level of knowledge and expertise in that can lead to more opportunities and more visibility. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, and I think that's where, you know, artists and creators specifically, because I respect the hell out of y'all, because I'm like, yo, y'all can make things, right? And so I think if you're able to do that and make things and apply that, it just starts to open up really interesting reasons to pay attention. And then everything, you can't do anything without attention.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I think that's just the way that I kind of look at stuff, right? I think that the thing that artists and creators can do is embrace new technologies, push the envelope, because what it does is it shakes things up, it makes people pay attention, it breaks their normal frame. Through that attention, you can then leverage it to do other things,
mm-hmm.
you know, redirect it at other projects, other initiatives, other things that deserve, you know, light and visibility. You know what I'm saying? And you can make money. And I think the thing with a lot of folks too is, let's just be honest, making money allows us to all keep doing what we're doing.
Exactly.
You know, so we have a an obligation, I think, to make money, because it allows you to stay around and put that stuff out there in the world, because it needs to be put out there in the world.
Mm-hmm. Artists, don't be afraid to make some money.
Don't be afraid to make some money.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
Don't be afraid to make some money. And you know what I mean? Just be realistic about it. You know, like, I was having this conversation the other month, because we were talking about doing a art show.
Mm.
But I said, you know, I don't want to do an art show where you walk into some gallery and there's a bunch of art on the walls and it all costs $5,000,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I said, because here's the thing. How many of those pieces are going to get sold that night?
Mm.
You know what I mean? And as an artist, I'd be mad as hell if I put my stuff up in a gallery and, like, you know what I mean? Mm. Like, and, like, so I was like, what if this is just coming out of, like, I said, just go with me for a second. This is kind of crazy. It's a crazy idea, but I'm in charge. So I can do what the fuck I want to do. You know what I'm saying? But, like, what if we told the artists to specifically bring prints, right? And the idea was, we gonna move these prints.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily, I mean, yeah, if you want to buy the big piece on the wall, cool. But like, I would much rather put you in a situation where you can walk away with something, yeah, right? Yeah. And so that was the whole idea. Is like, what if we did like art shows where the emphasis was really on, come here, you know, come with $100, mm-hmm. right? But like, with that $100, you can go buy a couple of prints from your favorite artists and support them, mm-hmm. and boom, boom, boom. And I can get people to come out there and do that. But like, you can't. It's gonna be hard to get people to come out here and say, "Yo, yeah, buy this for $5,000, yeah, $10,000."
Yeah, rent.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So it's like, and it's also it's art, because art, that realm is like an appreciating perspective. Like, oh, I know I'm going to buy this and it's going to appreciate. And you got certain people in Atlanta that buy art and collect specific Atlanta creatives and artists. But I think that's two things you said that I hear is, when there is a gold rush, be the guy like, picks and shovels,
$5. Yeah, that's it.
Because it's like, you know, like since that. I learned that, because that's like, oh, as a rapper, you can make a lot of money. Yeah. Okay, but as an A&R, you can make more money. Or as a producer, you might mean
as an engineer.
As an engineer.
Or a marketer, market the person.
Right.
Or, so I thought, since, because Wisdom, when I started, was almost like a project because I didn't have no money.
Yeah.
It was just like, how does my perspective look on the wall? And then I'm like, oh, I'm good at graphic art.
Yeah.
That's where I made most of my money at, graphic art. Because everybody wants the designs I create.
Yeah.
So, and then, so next thing was, you know, this had brain freeze on the last part. The last thing he was talking about, before I said
NFTs?
No, it's gonna come back. It's gonna come back. But yeah, those two things. Oh, they're selling the prints at, and then having the big piece on the wall is genius, because yeah, not a lot of people gonna come in to get that. You might get that one. You might get lucky that night. If someone makes one call to some producer, DJ, rapper, it's like, I'll be there tonight. It might buy it. But what you're gonna do is sell $110 prints.
Yeah,
you know, it's smart.
Yeah,
you know, it's, and I believe that artists should get that perspective, because then that feeling of marketing themselves and learning how to be a businessman while simultaneously being an artist is what's gonna propel us. Because that's our biggest flaw as artists is business.
Yeah,
you know, it's like me as an artist. I did my taxes yesterday. Yo, I dread my taxes. I dread money sometimes. I'm like, oh man, I gotta. But, and then I sit there, I'm like, why? Because sometimes I'm like, money is a well. It's going to come to me. When I'm in there doing my taxes, I switch to another person. I'm like, oh, I like this. Like, you know, I'm like, I love the flow of money and like my keeping my numbers in check.
Yeah.
Making sure my debts are paid off, everything. I'm like, if as an artist, for me speaking to whoever's listening, if you have a meticulous kind of like organized perspective, because most artists do, use that with numbers, use that with your finances, like just translate that without making it feel like that thing that you don't want to touch, because it does feel like that 4-hour class.
Yeah.
As an artist, anything like that feels like a 4-hour course. So you're like, oh, I just want to cut great right now. Artist is right now. And so those two different sides of the brain or whatever, or parts of yourself need to meet. And I think those scenarios, $10 pieces, because you're still going to pitch your piece out in the world, but you're making money right now.
Yeah, man. I've always kind of said, I kind of consider myself to be in the business of creative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try to, you know, because again, I don't consider myself to be a creative. I mean, people say I am. I have ideas, but I really try to respect people that are like, no, you really, like, really do this. Yeah. Like, you know, I just kind of, I'd be like, oh, let's do this.
Respect the peers.
So I really try to like respect it. You know what I'm saying? Like even with my designers and stuff, like I a lot of stuff they give me, I don't push back on it. I'm just like, you did this for a reason. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, I don't, unless there's just something like glaringly wrong with it, but I'm like,
I trust you for a reason.
Yeah, I trust you for a reason. You know, and that's why people like working with me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you know, and I say, so for me, I always say I try to focus on the business side so that people that are creative can be their full creative selves.
Because
I sure in the hell can't do what y'all do. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Artists are very sensitive and, you know, territorial in a way, like, just, I need to get this out. You know, dramatic. So it's like, you know, when you give them that, yo, I want you to be your best self.
Yeah.
I need to hear that. You need to know that in a sense. Wow, because some people just, that level of being a level-headed, like, person and seeing the other sides with other perspectives, and also business, letting someone hold your baby and then take it to the right place. it's like that as an artist, you can I can say that's challenging. But right. yeah. Being able to see like, oh, I see you put a lot into that. I respect that. And I want you to shine that way. But I'm here just for to make this make sense for you.
Yeah.
And my advice to the artist on that topic is to create something that might be just for you making money. You know what I mean? Sometimes you may be creating, you're like, man, this ain't about the money. Okay, well, take a month to create something that you okay with selling out of. You know what I'm saying? And that's still, it may be a F you to whatever the thing is that you're applying pressure to, but it's like, you might need to tap into that bag just so you can finance yourself.
Yeah.
And also get that out so you learn how to create things that can flip, that mm-hmm. can turn. You know what I mean? That's another thing in your arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
100.
Final wisdom, bro. Any last wisdom you want to give to the people?
And also, like, I'm sorry.
I also like
when you be like, give me one word that you've been using.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I like that one. So I'm
last just going two, out last two things. Last two things.
So, hey, man. I mean, you know, you kind of hit on it, man. I mean, you know, I'll just put it like this, man. You know, the more you are honest with yourself about reality, the easier it is to manipulate it however you want.
Mm.
I think a lot of people, we kind of put our blinders on. We live in this world. We wish and hope things were happening. And I'm just telling you, I want everybody just take an active, be active and present in your own life, and you will be amazed at what will happen when you start putting that intentionality behind things. Mm. And, you know, word I'll leave y'all with is one of my favorite words, budget. Stuff about to get tight. I'm telling y'all, omens. Man, like, again, I don't tell people they got a budget. I'm a big fan of budgeting.
Mm.
I use this app called YNAB. It stands for You Need a Budget. And I just say this, right? Like, I don't say this as in a budget for bread and water, you know, whatever it is. If you got a budget for, you know, to get a quarter, that's fine. You know, you got to put it in the budget so you know where it's going for. But the reason why I say that is, again, is because just like, again, money is a resource, it's a tool.
Yep.
And again, the more you can budget and you can control it, the more you can direct it in ways that'll help you accomplish your goals. The name of the game is, you know, find a way to increase your income while keeping your expenses consistent or reducing them.
Mm.
Use that surplus income to invest in, you know, assets to generate cash flow and equity and lay low.
Mm-hmm.
That's the game, man.
That's the game.
And again, as you understand your budget and your money, then you can do those things. You know what you know what I mean? And you can live a very comfortable life. There's people, I don't know, people, y'all heard of the term like unicorns, like the startups,
a
billion-dollar startup.
Mm-hmm.
There's another term. It's called a donkey. You know what a donkey is? It's a startup that makes $1 million a year with one person that runs it.
What?
So ask yourself, running a donkey ain't a bad lifestyle.
No, that's right. Running a thing. Yeah.
And I'm just telling people, like, you can, like, everybody's on this, I'm going to be a billionaire. I mean, okay, that's cool, but I'm saying, man, you can live a very, very nice, comfortable life. Making a couple hundred grand to $1 million a year, low overhead, and just be chilling. And again, I think all that just comes from just understanding your money and how you can do things to invest and build stuff. So get your money right.
Get your money
right.
Go live a fantastic life and do all the stuff you want to do.
Man.
You heard him.
We appreciate you.
I think that
man.
Was a great piece of advice.
Yeah.
It's a great place to close. Budget your money.
It's one of my favorite ones, man.
Yeah.
It's
a good I learned a lot. That's what I open saying I want to learn. Man, thank you, Brandon. Appreciate you coming through, man. Thank you.
For sure, man.
And it's the end of Free Wisdom Podcast, episode 14. Until next time.
Out.